MechCast, Sunday, December 27th, 2020. Hey, Mech Geeks, it's time for your MechCast, the show for Mech Geeks by Mech Geeks. I'm Adam, and this is the show where we discuss all things Macintosh. How you doing? Welcome back to the MechCast. Well, we're nearing the end of the year. I hope you had a happy, wonderful, and safe holiday season. I know it's a little bit different this year, but hopefully you did get a moment out to spend some time with friends, family, be it in person or virtually, again, remaining safe, or at least as safe as we can be in this time. I've had a bunch of wonderful emails and thoughts and best wishes for the holiday season and new year from the community, and I can't tell you how much that means to me. So thanks to all of you who have emailed in to say that. This episode of the MechCast is probably going to be a little bit shorter than normal. Again, I'm trying to take some time out and spend a little bit more time with my family. I hope, again, you're having an opportunity to do the same, family, friends, whatever it might be. But we do have a few things to talk about. News is winding down, obviously, as we get toward the end of the year, and it will ramp back up. No need to worry about that as soon as we start to go into the new year. But there are a couple of interesting stories here as we start to close out the year for Apple. So we'll be getting into those. We'll talk about 2020 and how it looked for Apple. Pretty incredible year overall, I think. Then there is a lot of speculation all of a sudden here at the end of the year about Apple Car. We'll get into what's going on with that. Also, still some rumors floating around of a possible new Apple TV update. And then a little bit of a 5G I don't want to call it a controversy, but just something you need to know about, especially if you are a Verizon customer. And that's just going to round out the news for this week. Then we're going to do a little bit of follow-up on some of the comments that I made last episode about buying a new Apple M1 Mac and, you know, whether you should be investing your money in RAM or SSDs. I made a statement, and the community came back with some of their own thoughts and comments. So we'll get into those. I also had called out or made a call for anybody who's been using Apple's new Fitness Plus service to share your thoughts on that. And we did get some feedback there. So we'll get into that. And then I just have some community stuff to talk about. So that will round out this episode of the MechCast. So should be a fun one, going to be a quick one, but let's just dive right into things. So 2020, pretty great year for Apple, don't you think? I mean, I think despite everything, right, everything else that was going on in the world, Apple made out pretty well this year. They did not too bad. And I would argue that they launched probably the best lineup of products they have ever had. And that's saying a lot. But we got a lot of great new products and services and things from Apple this year. A lot of exciting announcements, a lot of keynotes to go through. And I think if you look back, you know, you'll see some really good stuff this year. And the numbers seem to show it. As a matter of fact, Counterpoint Research this past week noted that the iPhone 12 became the best-selling 5G iPhone in the world in October. And that was with only about 2 weeks of sales. You remember Apple's iPhone 12 was delayed this year, so they had not rolled that out, and they already achieved the best-selling 5G iPhone, which is incredible. It also means that they made it to 7th on the best-selling 5G iPhone list for all of 2020. So that's going against all the other 5G phones that came out this past year. And in the number 2 spot in October was the iPhone 12 Pro. It was the second best-selling 5G iPhone on the market in October. So iPhone sales going incredibly well. They cited kind of pent-up demand for 5G, especially with respect to Apple products. Of course, the 5G iPhone being Apple's first 5G phone. So No doubt that many folks were waiting for Apple to move into 5Gs before they upgraded. So I just think it was a great year all the way around for iPhone, for iPad, for, you know, all of Apple's products, AirPods, the new AirPods Max we talked about last week. We'll see how those do. You know, they're getting a lot of really great reviews, and I'm hearing a lot of folks come out in defense of that price tag. So while it seemed high, I think everybody agrees it still is a little high, but it is an Apple premium. And some folks saying, hey, these are really great headphones and might be worth the cost. Of course, there's counter arguments to that as well, because you can get some great noise canceling headphones in a range about half of what or a price range at about half of what Apple sells those for. So debate rages on there, but they are getting some rave reviews. So that's very interesting to see. Of course, we've got great Mac products this year, including all of Apple's new M1 machines, which are incredible, which ultimately will probably lead to a boost in Mac sales. But even prior to that launch, Macs saw a great boost as well, at least according to a research note from Goldman Sachs. They say Mac revenues rose 50% year over year in the third quarter of 2020. And that's likely due in part to this whole pandemic thing. A lot more people working from home, working remotely, also folks doing school from home and needing new devices and machines to help out with that. So that helped with not only Mac sales, but as we know, also iPad sales for Apple. And then on top of that, you have the launch and the release of Apple's new M1 machines, which are getting rave reviews and a lot of buzz moving into this holiday season. So I wonder how many folks got new Apple M1 machines for the holidays. I bet you quite a few, and those should help with Apple, should help Apple when they post their quarterly numbers for Mac in the fourth quarter. So it'll be interesting to see how well they do there. But certainly for the third quarter, looks like Mac sales did very well. And I'd be curious, I'm still asking those of you out there who have invested in a new Apple M1 machine, new Apple Silicon machine, I'd love to hear from you. I'd love to hear your thoughts and opinions, especially if you got a new one over the holidays. How'd the setup go? How'd your first out-of-the-box experiences go? Share those with us. Shoot me an email. Send me an audio comment to maccast@gmail.com. Then it seems like the big story and speculation that was kind of happening this past week was Apple Car. Reuters came out first, I think, with a report speculating that Apple Car production could begin as early as 2024. Now, we're not even going to comment on the other crazy rumor out there that seemed to claim that Apple might have a car ready in 2021. I think that rumor was probably just a little bit off. They could be starting to move into production in 2021, especially if they want to make a 2024 release. So they'd start to have to basically have to start lining up suppliers, and getting things ready in the supply chain to meet that deadline, which could be why these rumors are starting to float around and sort of heat up a little bit. Of course, Apple Car rumors have been around for a long time. We've been talking about them for years at this point, but it seems like they're moving more from the R&D research phase, getting ready to move into some sort of level of production. At least that's what the rumor mill seems to be indicating. But Reuters was mentioning that one of the big new technologies, one of the breakthroughs that Apple is going to have with their vehicles is a new battery design. They say they're using a monocell battery design and investigating using lithium ion phosphate or LFP technology, battery chemistry, to effectively get more density in their batteries, which means they can be more efficient, they can have longer range, and they also say the LFP chemistry is less susceptible to overheating. So just overall better performing batteries. And the report then claims that Apple could radically reduce the cost of batteries used in their vehicles. So all of these things potentially leading to give them a leg up in that industry with the launch of the Apple Car. The report says that Apple has also once again reshifted their focus back to potentially producing their own vehicles. If you may remember, way back when, previous reports claimed that Apple had moved from actually a program to develop a self-driving car to more developing a system and technologies that they would likely sell to a partner or license to a partner in the automobile manufacturing industry to actually integrate into their vehicles. That Apple had kind of shifted away from that and was doing a self-driving car system, and that was what they were focused on. Now they're saying that Apple is moving back, and it's looking like they may actually produce their own vehicles. They would likely still use a manufacturing partner, but it would be more in line with sort of what they do with, you know, with the phones or the chips, for example. I guess the iPhone chip would be a great example. They're A-series chips, right? Those are designed by Apple, but ultimately manufactured and produced by Samsung. So similar thing here. Apple would find a manufacturing partner, still be an Apple-branded car, but somebody else would actually produce it for them. And that just makes sense because all of that tooling and that, you know, ramping up factories would be just not possible. So that information was all coming from Reuters. And then we had Goldman Sachs kind of saying something a little bit different in an investor note. They say that Apple is likely more interested in developing in-car experiences than actually producing a vehicle. And their logic was the lower profit margins in the car industry, just the competitive nature, and the fact that really when self-driving cars become a thing, people are going to be spending a lot of time in vehicles, and rather than focusing on driving, because the car is going to be doing it for you, you're going to be much more interested in information systems, in in-car experiences like entertainment systems, and that is all something that Apple is very good at creating, those experiences, those consumer experiences, and that's where the focus in their car program is. And I could see this really being a reality. This kind of ties into something that I talked about when we first started hearing about Apple Car. And I'm still really sticking to my guns. You know, I just, the idea of Apple actually producing and selling a vehicle seems way out there. Now, I will admit the thought and idea, you know, 10, 12 years ago of Apple actually making a phone also would have been a radical idea. So I don't put it out of the realm of possibility. Obviously, with the rumors that we've been hearing, we know they're looking into various things and a car could be that thing. But I really kind of foresee part of the future, especially when we get self-driving cars that are truly, truly autonomous. I really see this potential for a market where you don't own all your vehicles. You might own one vehicle, but as a second vehicle, a lot of families, at least here in the United States, I know it's maybe different elsewhere, but here in the U.S., a lot of folks do have two maybe even three vehicles in a family. So I could see supplementing that secondary vehicle with a car as a service. And for Apple, that would mean also building systems into those cars to help keep people entertained or allow them to do work while they're in a vehicle or access information or if you're on vacation, you know, pull up interesting points of interest and those sorts of things. And I could see cool technologies like augmented reality being built into the glass in that vehicle and showing you all kinds of overlay information and interesting stuff. And these are all technologies that Apple has been working on for years. You know, their artificial intelligence, Siri, all of that stuff could come together in a really neat system. And the idea of just paying a monthly fee to get a car as a service and not have things like insurance and car payments and maintenance and upkeep, I think that's a really interesting new model and something that could be in our future. And I think Apple is that kind of a forward-thinking company where they would be looking into that sort of thing. And so that sort of plays into all of these rumors in my mind, but that's just my own personal thoughts. You know, I've talked about it quite a bit, and many of you have written in to say, you disagree or you agree. And I think it's an interesting thing to think about. So if you have some thoughts on that, if you think I'm crazy, if you think maybe I'm on the right track, I'd love to hear from you. Please share your thoughts and opinions, mattcast@gmail.com, and definitely send in an audio comment. I'd love to hear from you on your thoughts on this one. But, you know, the idea of Apple making a car, does that seem crazy to you? It is a little bit out there, but again, I don't put it out of the realm of possibility. And as a matter of fact, when this whole rumor started releasing, Elon Musk, of course, jumped on Twitter and said that he had tried at one point to contact Apple about buying Tesla back in the day. Remember, we heard all those rumors about Apple potentially thinking about buying Tesla. It turns out it probably never was true, because he said it was back in the darkest days of the Model 3 program, reached out, and Tim Cook wouldn't even take a meeting with him. So Apple really not interested. And that also doesn't surprise me. And if they are working on their own car program, Apple tends to want to do it from the ground up their way. Often they will buy, I think, other companies that sort of play into that. And we've seen a lot of that happening with Apple and their car project. But the idea of buying an already fully formed company, Apple doesn't do that too often. I mean, the one exception that I can think of most recently would be Beats, which ultimately became Apple Music, right? So that program, and maybe even some of that went into the formation, I guess, of AirPods Max at this point, and probably AirPods Pro, right? Those headphone engineers and those sorts of things. But Apple really built their own products and their own style and design. They didn't just take Beats and sort of slap an Apple logo on it. And I couldn't see them doing that with something like Tesla, right? They want to build their own technologies. They want to build their own systems, and they want to do that from the ground up. So it doesn't surprise me Tim Cook didn't take that meeting. But all of these rumors pointing to 2024, maybe, as the time frame for Apple to release a car. But analyst Ming-Chi Kuo doesn't think they're going to be even ready by then. He says they're not going to have a vehicle ready to launch until probably 2025, maybe even as late as 2027, 2028. That's what he was telling his investors. You know, Apple, he says, is, you know, somewhat behind when it comes to self-driving car technologies, as they often are. But we've heard this before, right? Apple being sort of late to enter a market, and then struggling with their first couple releases. And I think that's what Ming-Chi Kuo is a little bit worried about. You think about technologies, even the iPhone to a certain degree, right? They weren't going to do apps, and they quickly realized that needed to be a big component. They also struggled with the price point, if you remember that. Apple Maps, when Apple got into mapping, had a not great release, and it took a few years for them to get better at it. And so the idea of doing that with a car, you know, there's a much higher risk, there's a much larger barrier to entry. And again, overall, the car market, very competitive and not very profitable in terms of the profit margins. Obviously, it's a profitable industry, but it doesn't have the kinds of profit margins that Apple is used to making on other things like their products and services. So again, for all these reasons, it just feels like, you know, Apple having their next market, their next disruptive market be automobiles, just all feels a little bit weird. But I guess we're going to have a few years now to hear this speculation, hear these rumors, and see how it all maybe comes together or maybe doesn't. So it's going to get very interesting moving forward. But in the meantime, I think we're going to see more things like Apple's AR and VR projects being their next focus on products and technology that, you know, you and I as consumers are going to have access to. Feels like at this point, the idea of walking into a dealership and buying an Apple car is at least a few years off at this point. Something that might be a little bit more immediate would be an updated Apple TV. We've been talking about this all year. Many of us were expecting Apple to actually update the Apple TV this year. According to Bloomberg and Mark Gurman, at least in his most recent newsletter, he thinks that is likely going to happen sometime in 2021. He basically reiterated a lot of the rumors we've been hearing that Apple is working on an updated Apple TV. He said it would have an updated processor. He didn't go into details, although we had heard previous rumors that Apple was looking at either a new variant of the A12 or A14 processor. It's not clear which one they would go with at this point. I would hope the latter, and really bring the Apple TV up to date, especially considering the fact that Mark Gurman says Apple is going to make a gaming-focused Apple TV. He says there will be a new remote. No word on the design, but he did mention previously that a new remote would have more Find My-like capabilities, allowing you to help locate the remote should you lose it. Hopefully that doesn't mean Apple's going to keep their kind of compact Siri remote design that a lot of people hate, you know, that tiny remote that does get lost everywhere. But I would assume if it does have Find My-like capabilities, they would be using or falling back on Apple's ultra-wideband capabilities that they have in their newer iPhones, just because that technology has the capability to do really close proximity positioning and those sorts of things. So I would imagine ultra-wideband chips coming into play if you're going to be doing something like Find My Remote. Bloomberg also says that Apple may even produce their own game controller. Again, he didn't have a lot of details there, but let's hope that it's not perfectly symmetrically shaped with just a single button and a trackpad. And then also it's expected that a new gaming-focused Apple TV would have larger storage capacity, bumping up to 64 gigabytes and 128 gigabytes of storage, at least according to recent rumors. And that makes sense if you're moving to a more gaming-focused product. You're going to want to have a lot more storage for bigger and better games. And obviously, a gaming-focused Apple TV would have a pretty significant tie-in with Apple's new Apple Arcade service. I think at one point we had heard that a new Apple TV might even have some exclusive titles that would only be available on the newer Apple TV, which could be an interesting and maybe controversial way for Apple to market it. Obviously, there's going to be folks that would not be happy with having to buy a new Apple TV to be able to get access to games on a service that maybe they're already paying for. So it'll be interesting to see if that does happen, how well that goes over. I would imagine not very well with current owners of the Apple Arcade service, but maybe they'd come out with a plus service that might cost a little bit more. There's a lot of things they possibly could do with that. So we'll just have to wait and see. And with more and more apps, just one other thing I wanted to comment about, because a few people had emailed in. We'd been talking about a new Apple TV and what it might be. And there has been some discussion in the community about the fact that, you know, Apple probably needs to find a way to actually make the Apple TV more relevant these days, mainly because the two reasons, and this could be why they're going with more of a gaming focus, the two reasons I think people buy a set-top box like Apple TV is to access streaming channels and streaming entertainment at this point. So Netflix, Hulu, HBO Max, Disney Plus, Apple TV Plus, all those services, right? And then the second reason is probably for games or gaming and, you know, maybe some apps and things like that along the way. Although, honestly, I don't use any apps at this point, I don't think, on my Apple TV. I'm using it for Apple Arcade and for streaming services. And in the case of that former, the streaming services, a lot of that stuff has been moved slowly to smart TVs. As a matter of fact, I have a Samsung TV. All of those services are built into it. Now, the thing about it is the user experience on all of that is pretty much garbage. But I will say I can get the Apple TV app on my smart TV without owning an Apple TV. And as you know, Apple TV as a set-top box is actually at a premium price point, right? You're looking at $149, $200 for the latest Apple TV. And so Apple really needs to find a way to justify that cost. And when you look at gaming consoles that can be purchased close to that price range, maybe for even for just a little bit more, Apple is in a very strange, weird position. So could a gaming-focused Apple TV fill that space and get people to want to still invest in a set-top box? I don't know, but I'm hearing more and more from the community that they're feeling like, at least for the entertainment side of things, hey, I don't really need an Apple TV. I can go with a Roku or a Fire TV or just use the stuff that's built into my TV already and save myself some money. So it is an interesting dilemma for Apple TV, and we'll have to see how Apple responds moving forward. But gaming focus might be a way to do it. Although, you know, with, like I said, with Switch out there and new consoles from Xbox and Sony, that's an interesting and probably difficult way to compete, I think. But again, love to hear your thoughts on this. And then finally, in the news for this week, hey, if you have a new iPhone 5G or just a 5G phone in general and you're on Verizon, this might not be such great news for you to hear. PC Magazine did some testing, some 5G versus 4G tests in some major markets, New York and Chicago, on Verizon's network, and they actually found that in some cases, you could get faster speeds by switching to 4G LTE. And the reason is that the rollout of the nationwide 5G on Verizon uses a technology called Dynamic Spectrum Sharing, or DSS. And that technology reuses some of the 4G channels for that 5G network. So that was sort of how they got their rollout to work. And while they didn't confirm that 4G was actually faster than 5G, in a statement, Verizon did say that for many of their customers, 5G speeds would be similar to 4G performance. So they're marketing 5G that's not really any faster than their 4G in most of their markets for most of their customers. So that has to be a little bit disappointing, to say the least, and a little bit frustrating. And it just is another example that shows, you know, Apple was not late to the 5G party in any way, shape, or form. As a matter of fact, it's looking like the carriers are late to the 5G party and maybe in some cases trying to pretend like things are better than they actually are. So, you know, I don't know. At the end of the day, does this stuff really matter a ton? I have to admit, you know, it's nice having the 5G. And I have T-Mobile and I've done some speed tests and it's definitely faster than the 4G that I had. But to tell you the truth, in day-to-day usage, I don't really notice a difference. I'm not doing anything personally on my phone that really requires speeds faster than 4G. You know, I can stream videos just fine. I can stream audio. In many cases, maybe the video quality would be better with the 5G and more bandwidth, but I don't watch a lot of streaming video on my phone, right? It's not the best experience. It's stuff I do in a pinch, and everything else, like downloading apps, playing games, all that stuff totally works fine. So again, we're in this weird era. I could understand for business and for maybe some specific applications, there's reasons why 5G might be better and having really, really fast network connectivity through your phone, especially if maybe you need to do tethering, something like that. But again, day to day, I don't know. Does it matter that much to most consumers? Not really sure. But still, I think if you're advertising 5G as a superior technology, it definitely should be faster, right? So that may be the ultimate point here. But yeah, that was interesting to see. And I don't know if it's just Verizon that has this problem. It's just the only one that we've heard about so far. So again, with that, that is going to do it for the news for this week. Before we move on, I do want to take a quick moment and thank a show sponsor, and that is Smile. I want to talk to you about Text Expander. absolutely love Text Expander. It is an app I use each and every day. Honestly, I don't know that I could keep up with my email on the MacCast without it, because it makes it really easy to create powerful snippets that really save time. Saves me a bunch of time. I can create little short abbreviations and have Text Expander do the typing work for me, especially for like common questions, common information that I often have to share with the community. As you might imagine, over the years, I get asked the same sorts of questions over and over again. And anytime I kind of have something that I find I type more than once, boom, that goes into a Text Expander snippet. And I really think that's the way most people want to use it, but they continue to add more and more powerful features. It is a really great tool for teams and businesses. You know, if you're working with legal departments and you need to keep language consistent, if you're working in customer service and you want to make sure that your customer service messaging is all the same, or your advertising messaging, your marketing messaging, Text Expander is a way to get your team all on the same page, all using the same snippets, and you can really have them covered. And the latest version of Text Expander even has a new and improved statistics reporting feature for organizations that can help them build reports and enter customized ranges for enterprise and individuals, so you can really track that ROI and see how much time your team is saving by using Text Expander. And best of all, Text Expander, it's available not only on the Mac, but also on iPhone and iPad, and even for Windows and Chrome. So everyone on your team can benefit from Text Expander. And best of all, show listeners to the MacCast can get 20% off their first year. To get all of the details to check out Text Expander and get that 20% off your first year, just visit textexpander.com/podcast. And a big thank you to Smile and Text Expander for their support of the show. So I honestly never thought, when I shared my thoughts on the new Apple Silicon Macs and whether you should spend more money on RAM versus storage, SSD storage, that it would stir up a debate in our community. But it definitely, definitely did. And there are some strong opinions about whether you buy more RAM or whether you buy more storage, believe it or not. And just to clarify my statements, you know, I was more specifically talking about Apple's new M1 machines. And to recap, I had basically said I would think you'd probably want to spend more money upgrading the storage, the SSD storage, rather than the RAM. As you know, the new M1 machines come with a default of 8 gigabytes of RAM, which isn't a lot. I personally prefer to have 16 gigs or more in my machines, especially if you're talking about pro-level machines, right? Like the MacBook Pro 13-inch. But you have to remember, the 13-inch MacBook Pro is really targeted more toward, I think, prosumers. I'm sure I'm going to get some emails on that one too, because I know there's pro users out there who definitely use the 13-inch MacBook Pro. But the reason I was kind of saying that specifically with the Apple M1 was because a lot of the benchmark testing and the early testing we were hearing was that for most use cases, the 8 gigabytes of RAM is performing very, very well. And many people were noticing that would, you know, many people who would usually want at least 16 gigs of RAM were noticing that the M1 Apple Silicon machines were performing just fine with 8 gigabytes of RAM. And another common discussion that seems to crop up in our community a lot is that we hear folks continually bumping up against the low built-in storage sizes on a lot of the solid-state Mac drives. And so, you know, if you have 256 gigs of storage, you might bump up against that a little bit quicker. And that's especially frustrating when you're on a notebook, right? You can add additional external storage, but if you're talking notebooks and portables, that's not really all that convenient. So I know I think more people could potentially benefit from having a gig or a terabyte of storage, excuse me, or 512 gigabytes of storage. Probably, in my mind, you know, I really don't want to get a machine that has less than 1 terabyte of storage personally, especially if you're going to have any kind of photo library that you want to be able to store all your photos locally. This is something we've talked about recently on the MacCast and some of the challenges and dilemmas of actually using external storage and making sure that it's fast enough. And so that's where my thinking was on it. And certainly the community chimed in and there were counter arguments to my statements. And I definitely don't disagree with these. One of them was, in terms of the RAM, the fact that most Macs these days, with the exclusion of the 27-inch iMac, and we'll see how long this lasts, and the Mac Pro, you cannot add RAM later. So if you're planning on keeping your machine for any length of time, and I would think that most Mac users are looking at a 3 to 5 year window, and again, these are generalizations. I know not everybody's in the same boat. I'm sure there's many folks out there who maybe get a new Mac every year or every 2 years. But, you know, I personally probably buy a new Mac every 4 to 5 years. And I think a lot of people fall in that 3 to 5 year range. So the argument becomes, hey, you know, you're not going to be able to just pop the door open on your Mac and throw in new RAM later if you suddenly decide that you need 16 or 32 or even 64. So you probably should invest in that new RAM up front. And in terms of the storage, the SSD, well, hey, if you need additional storage, you can get a fast Thunderbolt 3 SSD external drive to upgrade your storage. And your performance, while it's not going to be as speedy as the built-in storage, it still is going to perform pretty well. Like, you can get by with that. And it's kind of a way to actually do an upgrade or do an expansion in the future should you need more storage. So you'd have the ability to kind of upgrade your storage in a way where you're not going to be able to upgrade that RAM. And that is absolutely 100% true. So I totally agree with that statement and I can understand those arguments. And so I want to thank the community first for kind of coming back with that and really pointing that out, because I think it is an important thing to think about. But it also reminded me that everything, all of this stuff comes back to something we've often talked about in our community, which is that every person's needs when it comes to a Mac are going to be different, right? The use cases, whether you need more RAM, whether you need more storage, what's important to you, all of those things are not going to be the same for any two given people. And so a lot of times when we're trying to make recommendations on a general level, we're trying to maybe just cover as many people as we possibly can think of, but that's definitely not going to cover everyone. So what's right for one person, the answers to these questions for one person are not going to be the same answers for another person in every case. So we need to remember that when we're talking about this stuff, and I need to remember that when I'm communicating it here on the show, obviously. And I think the other rule that really rings true when we have these conversations is that ultimately you need to really understand your own personal use cases, the ways you use your Mac, what things are really ultimately important to you, and also what your budget is. So I guess that's another side of this argument, right? Or this conversation, really. It's not really an argument, it's a conversation. The side of this conversation is that, you know, your budget is going to somewhat dictate where you're going to put that money, where you're going to spend those dollars, right? And then after that, what's going to come into play is this idea of what are your use cases, what's important to you, what's going to make a difference in your day-to-day workflow, in your day-to-day usage. Is it going to be more storage? You know, you might be the type of person that's like, I don't want to deal with any external drives. I just want to have everything on my Mac. I want to have it always with me. I want something ultra portable. And I'm, you know, when my budget gets down to the dollars and cents and I'm running out of the amount of money that I can invest, I'm going to opt for more storage versus more RAM because I think I can get by with a little less RAM. Maybe my use cases aren't that heavy, but that storage is really, really important to me. Someone else might say, hey, I'm perfectly fine using external drives. I'm going to be getting maybe a desktop Mac, a Mac Mini. I don't care if I have to have external drives plugged into it. And dang it, I want to have every app possible open all at the same time. I want to make sure that I just have tons of RAM overhead. I'm going to just invest all that money in the RAM. But ultimately, I do think that for longevity, one universal truth maybe is that, and I've believed this for years and I still believe it, is that when you go to buy a Mac, in terms of timing, you should buy a Mac when you need a Mac. Don't worry about what's coming next, how long ago a machine came out, unless it's really obvious, you know, there's going to be a new one around the corner in a couple months. Which does happen and you can wait, but you know, buy the right Mac at the right time. So when you need a new machine is the time to buy a new machine. And then secondarily, always make sure that you get the best configuration that you can afford for you. So as much RAM as you possibly can afford, if you need RAM, as much storage as you possibly can afford, if you need storage, and invest in those things up front because that's going to give you the longevity on that machine. And so that's what I think about when I'm buying a new Mac. And sorry for any confusion or misunderstanding over the whole RAM versus storage stuff. I still do want to hear from you in the community, though. You know, like, what are the things that you're thinking about when you buy a machine? Is this the way you think about it? Or are you thinking about other factors? Is there something that we're missing here? So send us your emails, your auto comments, maccast@gmail.com. So the other thing that I kind of threw out in the last episode of the MacCast and asked you about was Apple Fitness Plus. Apple launched their Fitness Plus program. I'm planning on trying it out. To be honest, I've been a little bit lazy over the holidays, just enjoying a lot of great food, which is probably even more reason why I need to jump in and use Fitness Plus, but I haven't had a chance to try it out yet. I am planning on doing it, but luckily a few folks in our community have, and Gary was one of those folks. He jumped in, and here's what he had to say about Apple Fitness Plus and sort of his first experience and uses with it.
Hey, Adam, Gary. Quick review, quick comments on the Apple Fitness Plus. I kind of was thinking, no, I don't really want to join this initially, even though I do have the 3 months free. But then I ended up getting it. A couple of reasons why I was thinking no is their catalog looked pretty thin. And I'm like, well, what really is it going to benefit me to have this extra like service to have? Is it going to be better than, you know, other things that I've tried, like Peloton? I think Peloton has a lot of good stuff for a lower cost than Apple does, just for their on-screen things. So, but I ended up saying, you know what? I don't know, so I'm going to give it a try. So I signed up for the 3 months free. I initially, you know, I didn't really feel like, is it really personalized for you? It does show you those date details on the screen, but I was kind of expecting maybe more personalization. Maybe, you know, your heart rate's not in the zone that you need it to be. Maybe push a little harder. Maybe it was too much to ask that the class would know where you're at. I was kind of looking for group stuff. That would be really cool. The other issue that I ran into is the, like, you sign in on a treadmill with Apple Watch, you can connect to it, but then I didn't seem to be able to connect also to Apple Fitness. Maybe that's not a thing you can do. Maybe you are. I was going to actually look it up and see if you could connect that way. But I have found there are some really great trainers on there, very positive and uplifting. I've done 2 or 3 workouts already, and I overall give it a thumbs up. So if anyone's still on the fence, just give it a try.
Hey, Gary, thanks. Yeah, I think why not try it out if you got 3 months free? It's not going to hurt to give it a try, and you don't necessarily have to keep it if it's not, if you find it's like really not something for you. So sounds like you're having a positive experience for the most part. It feels like maybe you're even still a little bit on the fence, but I do like that advice to just give it a shot and see where it goes. Obviously, it sounds like they have a little bit of work to do, like a lot of things. You know, Apple's services and products, as we talked about earlier in the show, aren't necessarily, you know, fully fine-tuned or baked maybe right out of the gate, and they do improve over time. But overall, it looks fairly polished, although there are some bumps in the road. And as a matter of fact, Josh wrote in and emailed me to say that he so far is loving Fitness Plus. He's been doing the treadmill workouts. And also, even though he's not really a yoga person or a cool down person, he says in his email, he did try out some of the yoga classes and has been enjoying those, has taken a few of them at this point now, and is also finally doing and using cool down as part of his workout. And he said that's really helping him feel a lot better with his workouts. So there's at least some motivation in there maybe to try some new things. That was one of the things that really interested me when I started looking at the program, was they have this whole kind of getting started series that is something that I'm planning on trying out, because I'm not really big on fitness. I did a lot of walking a couple years ago and got a little bit healthy, and then I've fallen off of that more recently. So I'm worried about getting into a new fitness program. And the idea that I can kind of select a short workout, like 10-minute workouts, and maybe ease back into it, and they're going to help me sort of learn the moves and work my way up. I like that idea. So that's the thing I'm going to be trying out and maybe working with. But the other thing that Josh noted was he did have a few little hiccups. He ran into the issue where his Apple Watch would show the pairing canceled and not connect on his Apple TV or his iPad Mini 5. Ultimately, he had to just use his iPad. He tried a lot of the tricks we talked about. One of them, I think, in the previous episode of the MacCast, Apple has had some articles up on its website for how to get past this issue. It does seem to be somewhat of a known issue. Unfortunately for Josh, he wasn't able to get past it. And, you know, I really think that not being able to do it on the Apple TV, I feel like, you know, having it on big screen in your living room is probably the best experience. But maybe an iPad, if you're doing it with a treadmill and you have a stand, or you're doing a cycling workout, maybe that's a better place to be able to do those kinds of workouts, because, you know, maybe you don't have your cycling equipment or your equipment in the same room as a big screen TV, something like that. I could see that. But really, I think having that living room big screen experience is going to be the one that most people want to work with. So hopefully this is just a little early hiccups in the service, and Apple gets those bugs sorted out. But overall, so far, we've had, you know, two pretty positive reviews from the community for Apple Fitness Plus. So if you're considering checking it out and haven't yet, there you go. You might want to give it a shot. And also, again, still, if you are using it, I'd love to hear your thoughts and opinions on what you're liking, maybe what you're not liking so much, and maybe even just some thoughts on where you think Apple should go with a service like this. Is it going to be around in a couple of years? Because Apple does have that thing where they'll try something and it lasts not very long and they kind of abandon it as well. So Fitness Plus is one of those interesting ones that I think not a lot of folks saw coming from Apple, but it does make sense because we've been hearing more and more rumors that they want to push into this health and fitness area ever since Apple Watch, and they keep moving further and further in this direction, and I think this is a great next step, but time will tell. So last thing that I wanted to talk to you about in this episode is really just a quick thank you to those of you in the community, everybody from members or community members that have been with us since the very beginning, years and years at this point. We've been doing this for 16 years, believe it or not. First episode of the MacCast started on December 13th, 2004. So I've been doing this a long time. It's actually the job that I've held the longest in my life. And I love doing this. And it's because of you in the community, and even those of you who have just recently found the show. And I love hearing that, you know, all the folks that are new, all the folks that have been with us for years, I just want to say really from my heart and really thoughtfully that you're the reason this show exists. You're the reason that this is part of the way that myself and my family are able to survive, honestly. You know, you help pay some of the bills, and that means a ton to me. I do make part of my living off this podcast, and it is because of your support, your commitment, your contributions to the show that this show is popular and continues to go on. Those of you who directly support through Patreon, extra special thanks to you. We really do appreciate it, every single one of you. And it doesn't matter how you participate, whether it's listening and that's it, whether it's listening and sending in your emails and audio comments, whether it's supporting directly through Patreon, it all means a lot. It all adds up to a lot. And I am incredibly thankful. And every time, you know, every year that goes by, it just reminds me how great this community is. And I love having you be a part of it. And thank you for continuing to stay subscribed and continuing to listen. I just can't say thank you enough. So I really wanted to get that in here at the end of the year. And I look forward to hopefully another 16 years. We'll see how long you want me to keep doing this. But as long as you're listening, as long as you're enjoying it, and as long as, you know, I plan to keep on doing this show because I really, really do love it. It is a great passion of mine, and I feel privileged and honored to be able to do it. So thank you, thank you, thank you. And I think with that, that is going to do it for this episode of the MacCast. Before I leave you, I do want to take a quick moment and thank my show sponsor, Smile, makers of Text Expander, PDF Pen, also Text Expander for iPhone and iPad, and PDF Pen for iOS. You can get more information and details on all of their great software by visiting smilesoftware.com/podcast. Bandwidth for the MacCast is provided by CacheFly. You can find them at cachefly.com. And all advertising on the MacCast is handled by Backbeat Media. They are at backbeatmedia.com. As always, the community, you are a huge part of this show. So please keep your emails and your audio comments coming. If you have a comment or a question, something you'd like to hear covered on a future episode of the MacCast, you can send those emails and audio comments to MacCast@gmail.com. You're also welcome to call in on the listener hotline and leave a voicemail. That phone number is 281-622-4269, 281-MAC-IM-9. If you need show notes, links to anything that I talked about on this or any other episode of the MacCast, you'll find those on the website. That's at maccast.com. And if you want to follow me on social media, you can find me on Twitter, twitter.com/MacCast, or you can check out the MacCast Facebook page over at facebook.com/TheMacCast, and you can find me on Instagram at MacCast on Instagram. That is going to do it for now. Until next time, I will talk to you all again real soon.